On the line, I've got Lani. Good morning, Lani.
Good morning, Aaron.
Lani is what's called a sophrologist. This is, we'll get Lani to explain that in a moment. I think you might be the first sophrologist in the country, but sophrology is something that happens a lot, and particularly in Europe. As always, I ask you to give us a little explanation of what that word means.
Yeah, I actually am the only sophrologist still, as far as I'm aware. And the reason we know that is because sophrology is being taught in other languages for many years, and just recently in about the last 20 years being taught in English.
Okay.
And as far as we know, all the organizations that are teaching sophrology have never taught anyone from New Zealand. So this is me, unless someone's moved in, but they're not aware of it. And we are members of the Sophrology Federation. So anyway, here I am in New Zealand trying to pioneer the technique of sophrology into the country.
and what do you think it's, what can it bring people?
So actually, sophrology is, we term it as happiness training.
Right.
Because we're allowing the practice that we do allows the nervous system to come into a state of rest. And when you're in a, when the nervous system is at rest, then you have a more, you have more clarity, and you're able to look at a hopeful, creative, positive future for yourself.
It sounds nice.
And this happens because the exercise creates the transmission of serotonin and dopamine in the brain. So, and those two hormones create contentment and happiness in the body. So,
okay.
Yeah, it's really about, it's creating happiness for you.
So you want to talk about brain balance today. So, and the implication,
yeah,
I think I said this off the air. I said, are our brains not balanced at the moment?
And I said, definitely not.
yeah. So give us the lowdown on that.
Well, what I just mentioned about the sophrology moving us into a state of happiness because the balances the nervous system. This is part of balancing the brain. So what happens is the brain creates the neurotransmitters that then send chemical messages out into the body, and then the body systems produce hormones and situations in the body that then, you know, cause us to go into either a state of stress or a state of relaxation. And when we're in a state of relaxation, we have clarity, we can think for ourselves, we can create positive response rather than reaction. Spontaneous reaction generally can get us into trouble, either anger, you know, using the emotions that cause either too much anger or too much silliness.
Yeah.
And then we just don't respond properly to the situation. So, so in sophrology, we use a form of meditation that we call dynamic relaxation. And this is because we use balanced breathing, gentle movement, and creative visioning in the meditations. We meditate in a variety of postures. So we're not just getting ourselves, most people, when I say meditation, they're like, oh, I can't sit in that position. And I'm like, what position do you think we sit in? And most people imagine it to be the lotus position, where we're sitting cross-legged with our wrists out on our knees, and we're just in that mode of meditation. Well, that's not what we do in sophrology, because we want to meditate in a state where we would be in regular life, because we're actually trying to train the brain. So we might be standing, walking, sitting in chairs that we would normally use in like a work setting or school setting, or even at home, like at the dining room table or something like that.
Yeah.
And we're occasionally we'll lie down, but most of the time we're upright, and we're actively engaged in the meditation, because our brains are actively engaged in life. And if we can't train our brain in a peaceful state, then when we are actually approaching chaotic situations in life, the brain is just going to react to the chaos rather than having been trained on how to handle that chaos and move into a different space. So these techniques that we use actually trigger happiness and relaxed neurotransmitters in the body so that we can use our whole human structure to be in that happy, safe space and then monitor monitor the situation and how we're going to handle it. So we're actually able to think clearly in the moment within milliseconds, because that's our bodies and our brains respond in milliseconds to the life that's going on around us.
And is a lot of our response based on our emotional state at the time, as opposed to the rationalization we might come up with afterwards?
Yep. Yeah. So our, it is based on our emotions, and our emotions are carried in our limbic system in the, in what's called the amygdala. So the amygdala in the brain actually creates emotion. We don't do that. Like, we don't intentionally create emotion. Mm. It's actually produced in the brain. We're actually only responding to the emotion. Being aware of our emotions and what they're doing, and then being able to be in control of them and use the frontal lobe. So I've heard different podcasts and different people and doctors refer to the frontal lobe as the adulting part of our brain, yeah, and the amygdala as the adolescent part of our brain. Because the amygdala, the emotions will just flare and there's no controlling them. And so being childlike or teenager-like,
yeah,
the responses to the amygdala and to the emotion, rather than using the frontal lobe to determine what our next strategy will be.
So that our emotional state kind of determines whether we're using the rational part of our brain or the emotional part of our brain to respond.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
So the frontal lobe is it's in the front, like your forehead, yep, the frontal part of your brain. And our frontal lobe is useful for reasoning, so being able to logically use our ability to work through something, to make a decision. And then it's also good, it also is useful for our social interaction and engagement with people around us. It controls our working memory, our attention span, having a certain amount of self-control. Our voluntary muscle movements, like, you know, whether we're going to hug someone or punch them.
It starts from there.
And then, yeah, exactly. I mean, and it also just helps to retrieve. It's a learning and recall strategy. So being able to retrieve our knowledge or our memories that are most useful in the moment. So okay, if we're allowing our amygdala to dominate the situation, then we're not using all of these tactics and strategies that are in the frontal lobe to respond to the situation in an appropriate way.
So when we have times where we have an interaction, then afterwards you think of something like, oh, I wish I'd mentioned that right then. Is that kind of a part of it? So if you're in this good place that your sophrology is trying to get us into, you're more likely to have access to that information that you wished you'd thought of earlier.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah. So there's four attitudes in sophrology, and one of those attitudes is to pause, just take a moment, yeah, you know, 30 to 60 seconds, engage with your breath, allow some oxygen to flow into your brain. And then evaluate the situation around you and use your frontal lobe to reason and identify what is the best way for me to respond in the situation. So it's actually pause for a minute. Don't respond to that emotion. Don't respond to the amygdala. Give your, you know, tell your amygdala to go sit in the corner and have a timeout while you engage your frontal lobe to determine the best response to the situation.
So that's no way to keep an argument going, though, is it?
Well, that's the best way to engage in a debate. I'm going to call it a debate.
Yeah.
Because then you're actually able to respond intelligently rather than wishy. Because if you're responding with emotion, and mostly we're talking about negative emotions here, emotions that are not helpful. Anger is not helpful. Creating a contentious environment is not helpful. It doesn't help us to identify what is the best strategy for what we can do in our situation. Being able to have a respectful conversation does not take place when you're allowing anger and fear to dominate the environment.
So we've got an election coming up, Lani, and you, all the words you were using there were reminding me of the election environment. And I've recently come to the conclusion, like, I almost don't want to participate in politics anymore. If I'm participating and I'm getting annoyed or angry, then I figure something's gone wrong, and that's cool because I don't have my hands on the levers of power. But are the people who've got their hands on the levers of power, are they all reacting out of emotion? Yeah, out of emotion, are these negative states? What are the odds? Pretty good, aren't they?
Well, yeah, they definitely are. I mean, you look at, so people in politics look at, you know, the ego, for example, their self-esteem, you know, is the ego dominating the situation? Are they looking at this as, this is my livelihood, this is my support. If I don't get elected into this position, then I have to go find my own job. And I won't be elected into this position where other people are paying my salary. So it becomes an emotional push for them to, it's a survival mode. I have to be in this position in order to you know, take care of myself and my family, if that's the case. And also, it's my pride. I want to win, you know, competitive nature of politics. So for sure, because the height of emotion is running our egos and our fear. So we have this fear of survival. We have this pride that gets in the way. So those two emotions right there are what's pushing politics and causing politicians to behave the way that they behave.
And then we have the strategies, and it's very common now to use to make people angry to get them engaged, and the rise of social media has enhanced that considerably, but it used to happen beforehand. How can we walk? Do we have to wait for everyone to get sick of being angry? Like, oh, why I'm just so angry all the time, and I want to change. Do we have to wait for that? Like, what's your solution?
Yeah. The solution is stop, meditate, get into that, you know, breathe. I mean, literally 30 to 60 seconds of breathing allows you to move into a neutral space. It allows your body to create serotonin and dopamine in the body so that you can now generate a more happy, loving response. What's the different? What is the opposite of anger and fear? The emotion, the opposite emotion for anger and fear is love and happiness. And until people are, sick of being angry and fearful and just mad all the time and moving into that space of love, looking, you know, contemplating how can I, you know, what is my most loving response?
That's a funny thing. What can I do to... A phrase like that, what's my most loving response, said the politician in the middle of a debate. Never.
Mm-hmm.
Well, maybe not.
What is the
never.
Kind? If you don't want to use the word love, then use the word kind. What is the kind response?
I like you using the word love because it really puts it right there, like in our face, about how disastrous the dynamic is around politics.
Well, it's within our moral nature to be loving and kind. And to be happy. It's our nature. We are, that's what we're naturally meant to be doing. And because we're going against that, when we allow anger and frustration and fear and pride to get in the way, it's causing stress in the body, and the stress in the body is what makes you sick. And then you get high blood pressure, high heart rate, and then the body breaks down and you go into burnout and lots of suffering with illness.
And burnout of politicians is actually very common.
Mm-hmm.
It
totally is, because they're not responding from a loving space. And when they're pushed into a corner and love and kindness and happiness cannot dominate, then you move into a state of burnout, because the body can't handle those heightened hormones that are continually taking place. It's the sympathetic nervous system, which is in constant high alert. And when the sympathetic nervous system is in constant high alert, you're all of the things that make us unwell, you can't sleep, you're not eating properly, so your digestive system is all messed up. High blood pressure, a high heart rate, all of these things, everything's heightened and stressed and tense all of the time. And your parasympathetic nervous system can't kick in and calm your body down. And then you can't think clearly, and you're just making outrageous decisions. You're allowing your amygdala to run your life. And the amygdala, again, is your adolescent space in your brain.
Yeah, and that's, as we discussed earlier, just responding from whatever emotional state we're in at the time,
How do children and teenagers respond to situations?
Yeah, like when they're under stress.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah.
It now, a child is throwing a temper tantrum on the floor and crying and screaming because they don't know the words to actually speak what they want to say. Because, well, truthfully, the gray matter in their brain isn't fully developed, so they actually don't have the ability to respond properly.
Theoretically,
but we do. As adults, we do.
Yeah, and theoretically, our politicians do. They do have the ability.
They definitely do.
How would you coach someone who was in the high levels of government? Could you coach them? Would they become so unrecognizable from the person they were before that they wouldn't be able to even relate to the people they were working with? Like, what do you think about all that?
Yeah, in the space of politics, I'm not even sure that a joyful, happy, kind, loving person could survive in politics, because everyone else around them is corrupt. I think that they would, when they changed their lives and they moved into that space of loving kindness and I'm going to be a loving, kind politician. For example, Jacinda Ardern. Look at what happened with her. She realized she was becoming a person that she didn't want to be. Stress took over her. Burnout was taking over her. And she realized, this is not for me anymore. I must remove myself from this environment.
Yeah, she was. I know there's a lot of people who, there was the people who fell in love with Jacinda and the people who think that she's the root of all evil through what happened through COVID. But I think my observation is that she was a politician who had a relatively good amount of empathy, the capacity for empathy. It's probably quite rare amongst politicians, especially if you look at you weren't around for Helen Clark. She's a very smart person, but she had to go through a lot of fights and battles within the Labour Party before she became Prime Minister. There are a lot of dead bodies left in her wake. Whereas Jacinda kind of fell into the leadership role because of a crisis in Labour, just a little bit by chance. So she hadn't kind of had to scrap her way to the top. So definitely some empathy still there.
If you look at her triumphs, the things that she got recognized for in New Zealand and out in the world were how at the beginning of COVID, how she handled COVID, and also how she handled the Christchurch catastrophes, with loving kindness, instantly responding with, okay, no more guns in the country, and just things where she was this erratic, angry behavior has caused this. And so my response is we're handling this with loving kindness. And that's what she was doing. And she did that at the beginning of COVID. And I, you know, perhaps what happened as we went through COVID was not all of her doing. She may have been pushed into a corner by the situation and the people around her.
I think the people around her, the Labour MPs are a funny lot. And they lack the cojones to do what they say they should be doing, and they seem to be very much. They don't like it if the Labour Party goes too far left, which is ironic. But and so and all that stuff, all that political stuff came in. Whereas, like you say, I think in the moment of the crisis, she was emotionally grounded enough to make some really good decisions. And as soon as there was time to sit around the table with the cabinet, then the decisions, went a little bit awry. Some people just hate Jacinda now, so I don't know how far we can go with that one. Believe she's the, you know.
Well, I just think that, just in my observation, she seemed to be a predominantly loving, kind person. And it just took over her, and that's why she had to remove herself from office.
Do you think becoming a mother during that time enhanced that? I mean, you know what it's like to become a mother for the first time. I don't know how you do that while you're prime minister, but
possibly. I mean, yeah, becoming a mother changes you for sure. But I just, your question, if I was to work with politicians and help them to move into a space of loving kindness and happiness, who's to say? I mean, that's something that only they can determine for themselves if they would be able to manage in that environment or if they would, recognize, this isn't a place where I want to be. And that's what sophrology does. Sophrology changes a person, which is what we want, because we want them to move into that space of happiness. And when you're in that space of happiness, you can actually make clear decisions for your life. You can manage your life in a more helpful, productive way. Mm. And so it's very possible that, sophrology is life-changing. It changed my life. It took me from a space of burnout and grief and depression into the place where I'm at now. And I literally look at situations in a happy way. There's a lot of really, there's not great things that happen to me. Like I don't live, no one does. No one lives a euphoric lifestyle. But when things do happen, I respond in a more happy way. And at the end of the day, when I look back and I look at, I'm surprised that I responded that way, because 5 years ago, I would have responded differently.
Were you responding out of the kind of the fight or flight state more often?
More with the emotions, the fight or flight, and using my emotions to be angry and upset and to create contention in an environment where it didn't need to be there. It's not productive. It's not helpful. Not helpful to the people around you. It's not helpful to yourself. Mm. You're better off being in a state of happiness where you can think clearly and use sound judgment and the logic that your frontal lobe can create for you to determine a more peaceful path that actually is beneficial to everyone.
So also, you say you were dealing with burnout, and I mentioned before about the situation where you're in a debate and then afterwards you're like, I should have mentioned such and such, and you're saying if you're following sophrology's processes, you're more likely to have that information be present when you need it. So were you in that state of burnout, were you finding that was the opposite for you, that you couldn't put your finger on certain information that you wanted, you couldn't remember things? Was that kind of the story?
Yeah, brain fog. Mm. You can't. When you allow your emotions to take over, your brain fog sets in, and you can't access the frontal lobe the way that you need to. And so you're not reasoning properly. Your responses in social environments are not appropriate. You're not even using your muscle movements. Like, you can't go exercise. You can't physically get yourself to do the things that you that are best for your body, your physical well-being, because you're just there's so much brain fog going on that you can't analyze the situation in a healthy way.
Right, it's hard to just do the sensible thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Now, one thing I wanted to ask, and that this sort of, well, it's to do with the fight, flight, or freeze situation. I tend to think of that as a binary thing, like you're either in fight or flight state or you're not. But the way you were talking, especially at the start, was that this is more of a continuum, and you can get into more and more clarity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can. I mean, there is coming into that state of balance. So yeah, your sympathetic nervous system is either heightened because you're in fight, flight, or freeze, or your parasympathetic nervous system is functioning and you're calm. You're in a state of calm. You're in a state of clarity, and you're able to make appropriate decisions. And yeah, it's generally either or for the autonomic nervous system.
Yeah.
And it's very easy to move in between both if you understand how to do it. But for the most part, most people in general live their life in a state of sympathetic 24/7.
Right. And we shouldn't get confused by the use of the word sympathetic there, because we think sympathy is a good thing.
Right. The sympathetic nervous system being fight, flight, or freeze.
Right. Yeah. They should have named it.
Locked up, tense. Yeah.
They should have named it the other way around. It's very it's confusing.
Yeah, it is, definitely.
But we want to be, well, I mean, what's the nervous system being sympathetic to? Is there like a, can we work
to the body, to the environment? So when you're in sympathetic nervous system mode, your body is saying you're in danger.
Right.
And what should you do now? And your body is responding to the what's going on in your limbic system, mainly your emotions.
Yeah. Right.
So your body is being sympathetic to the emotion that is being created, and yeah, it's being created in your amygdala. You do not, this is so important for people to understand, we do not create emotion. Emotion is created in the brain. We respond to the emotion. We get to choose how we're going to respond to the emotion. We have a choice.
Sometimes it's pretty hard, though.
It's hard if you don't train yourself, and that's the point of sophrology. Let's train our brains to figure out how to respond appropriately to the emotion in the body.
Can you also use sophrology, like you say, that the emotion is created in our brain, that we're not determining the emotion, but you can determine the environment or the mindset that leads to the emotion, can't you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you definitely can. You can determine everything. You can actually also pre-think a situation, like, you know, here's how I generally respond in this environment. So therefore, I don't want to put myself in that environment. So I'm going to go do something else tonight. You know,
okay.
I don't want my night to end this way because I still don't have control over my behavior in that situation. So until I can learn how to control myself in that environment, I'm not going to go do that thing. And you just take control of your behavior.
What if you have to be in the environment?
Well, then you have to learn how to take control of yourself and use your frontal lobe properly.
And that could be a slow process done outside the environment, I imagine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, that's the whole point of meditating the way that we do in sophrology with the dynamic relaxation, because we can actually meditate on a situation and then create a positive response for ourselves. So we can improve our performance by meditating, by premeditating what my response is going to be in that environment. If you're a politician and someone, you know, if, you know, you can create a situation. Okay, so so-and-so is going to say this about me. My response is going to be intelligent and helpful, and I'm going to reason through it properly. And you train your brain to be in that state. And then when it comes to that situation, if it arises, we can't always foretell the future, but, you know, we can imagine. We can imagine certain situations and what our positive response is going to be to that situation, so that if it does come up, we know how we're going to respond. And that's even, you know, in a work environment and with the way that you respond to your supervisor, to your colleagues around you. You know, my response to this certain situation is going to be this. I'm going to be self-caring. I'm going to take care of myself. If my boss comes to me at, you know, 4:55 on a Friday afternoon and says, I need this, my response needs to be, I have a family, you know, and to be able to have the confidence to be able to say that, because when you are radiating that kind of confidence and that sort of emotion, it's respectful. And your boss will sense that respect and will respond back to the confidence and the respect that you're giving. So because when you're responding with love, the radiation comes out of your being and touches the love that is within the person that you're speaking to.
Interesting.
Yeah. And so it's really just about building that confidence to, so that you can confidently speak with loving kindness in any situation, because that is what we respond to as humans. It's our human nature. So if I'm responding to life in a loving, kind way, and I'm radiating that, then everyone that I interact with and engage with throughout the day is going to feel that.
Yeah, yeah. So Lani, well, folks, I should, if you just joined us, we're talking to Lani about sophrology, and we do this every few weeks. Is there something you can give us with a place to go, something to read, some meditations somewhere that if people want to follow this up?
Yeah, so I have a website, sophrosolace.com. It's S-O-P-H-R-O, sophrosolace.com. And also, if you want to go listen to a few meditations, I've got some up on Spotify now, so they can just search me as an artist. There's an album I put up called Healing and Recovery that's really good for when you're feeling unwell. There's about 5 meditations there to help you with your sleep and your breathing strategies and just your mental capacity while you're trying to recover from illness.
Okay, and that's under your name, Lani Puriri.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's L-A-N-I, people, then P-U-R-I-R-I.
Right, yep. They can search me on Spotify and there I will be.
Okay, awesome. Well, look, Lani, really good to talk to you this morning. Have you got anything, any last thought you want to leave us with?
No, just take care of yourself and let's do some happiness training. Call, you know, reach out to me, sophrosolace@gmail.com, and just, or go to my website and fill out the contact form. And let's move you into a space of happiness so you can radiate loving kindness.
All right. Thanks for your time this morning, Lani.